want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. Geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. I cover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 377, recorded live on November 12th, 2014. I'm your host, Ted Hard Hat with
Scott Burks.
Steven's ad infinitum.
You can join our chat room or watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. And find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by cache-advance.com for all your geocaching needs. Cache-advance.com. Go find it. Jeez. I'll tell you what. Yeah, when these goofballs start finding new things when it comes to stuff you can do with Google while we're playing, what is this new thing called Draw? This is something that Google has given and bestowed upon us, and apparently what you can do is pencil draw different things on said person, and it will stick to your face as you're going. So they're doing
wow, awesome. Andy, you are towing that line.
Oh, man. So, yes, this is just like giving, you know, matches to the pyrotechnic gear here and see what happens. All part of the fun. Let's see. This week, not too much for me except for, and I had to laugh because just before the show started, Corey was showing, and I'll put his gorgeous face up on the screen. Corey, show us your phone with the temperature in Montana as we speak, because
are we playing that game today?
Oh, yeah. The cold snap has come.
I don't know. What do you got, Corey?
Let's see. Because it just went down. Here we go.
Here's Chicago, by the way.
All right. Scott, well, I got a big moon there, Scott. What do we got? 25 degrees for Chicago. Oh,
I got you on that one.
All right. And then Corey's got 7.
I got 7.
Oh, Lord.
Yep.
7 degrees.
You win. You win.
Dave, how are things up in Maryland?
We're at 47 right now and expecting to get colder over the next couple days. We had a couple 60-degree days, and now it's going to get cold.
Yeah, because we actually had 75 down here in North Kakalaki, and just for giggles and kicks, we've got...
I want to punch him when he says stuff like that.
65 degrees right now.
Jesus
Christ. But the cold front is coming.
You poor baby. Oh, my God.
We may have to put a hoodie on.
Oh, no.
Maybe it'll get down to 50.
It might. We have to wear a parka tomorrow. No, actually, the highs. I think the highs are supposed to be in pretty much the 40s for the next week here. So it's going to be chilly.
Oh, brr.
It's terrible. Nobody's got to do it,
right?
Well, for those of us who don't share, you know, want to live by caribou. We live by other things like gators. Right. So, anyways,
yes, I have nothing. Nothing in Illinois will kill me. It's roaming around.
Heck, that's just
everything we own is in hibernation.
I tell you. Let's see. So, not too much for geocaching for me this week. Getting ready for the cold snap and actually considering to do some maintenance coming up on some of my geocaches over the next week or so before the cold really kicks in. But and for those of you who don't have to wear snowshoes to get to your geocaches yet, I would probably suggest you start considering that too for winter coming in for the northern hemisphere. Mr. Scott, how about you?
What about me?
How when people are taking pictures?
What?
Who's taking? You didn't write that in, Corey. Are you messing around with the show notes again?
What did I say? Oh, yeah. Oh, so listen to this story. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know we were on to, like, what we were up to. So okay. Last weekend, I'm out geocaching, right? And I'm in Long Grove, Illinois, and it's a beautiful little town. Okay, beautiful little town. So beautiful, in fact, that every family, whether it was a full family or whether it was people who just got engaged, taking engagement photos, everywhere I went, somebody was taking a picture. Everywhere we went, me and Jesse were out, they were everywhere. It was I must have counted 15 couples and families taking pictures right by caches. One of them was literally 15 feet from a cache, and it was like this like couple getting married, and they were so happy and in love. I'm like, oh, goodness.
Really? And you being the bundle of love.
You know, they were, you know, they were in their mid-20s, all happy, the whole world in front of them, you know, not jaded by life yet. You know, didn't have kids yet. You know, marriage. Yes, looking forward to it. Yes. But like, I mean, they were everywhere. You know, because it was a beautiful weekend. You know, when all the leaves were, you know, up the trees and on the ground. It was fall in Chicago. We were in this tiny little town, a tiny little downtown, and as everybody was taking pictures everywhere. Photographers were everywhere. It was terrible.
It's fall up here. It's yeah. Now all the leaves gone now. They're like I think you said last week. They're very pretty on the ground.
Yeah, but it's about 95% gone. Yeah, there's very little left on the trees. Yeah. A smidgen here and there, but pretty much leafless up in the trees. Yeah, which makes it fun to kick around in the woods. You know, you get the woods are now full of leaves. You know, so it's fun to kick around.
Yes, absolutely, Mr. Corey. How about yourself?
I was braving the cold storm, and so I cuddled inside.
Well, there you go.
You see, I cuddled inside.
I did not get outside.
It started already, man. It's just starting to get into single digits, and you are wimping out already.
Mm-hmm. Yep. My wife's fault. She said, it's cold. Can you cuddle? I said, oh, yeah.
Oh, I'll cuddle.
Paid for a
family-friendly show. That's all.
Wow. Mr. Dave, please save us. What have you been up to?
Not a lot of caching this week or so. Got a little bit of Monty stuff in yesterday on the day off, but not much this week.
Oh, well, hey, you know, it can't be all geocaching all the time, especially for some of us that have to dig through our igloo walls to get to where we need to get to find a geocache.
Yeah. It'll lighten up, in the next couple of months, definitely.
Well, I read already because I think Marquette, I was checking on my brother because, of course, they got a lot of snow when the storm went through the past couple of days. Marquette got 35 inches of snow.
Oh, God, that's
amazing. Just 2 days ago, I think it was, and they expect to have 40 by the end of the week. Oh. So, yeah. No, that's for me in North Carolina where I don't have a snow shovel, that's a bit much.
That's it. Oh, that's blah. Oh.
Welcome to winter, blah.
It's November. I get the cold. I'll take the cold and the rain, but like when you're looking at like 8 to 10 inches of snow in November, that's just brutal. You know, that makes it a long winter. You know,
yes.
What makes winter long is the snow on the ground. The less snow, it seems winter goes by quicker. You know.
Yeah. Well, it also makes it rough on the ground when you got snow and ice in June.
Right. Yeah. Right.
All right. Well, let's move on. We got the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on the geocaching podcasting community. And what's coming up this week on Geo Gearheads is episode 150. They're doing Puzzles 2, where Daryl says, we're driving into puzzles a little further with Jennifer. Scott, be nice. Author of the geocaching puzzle of the day. So that's what's going on for Geo Gearheads tomorrow on Thursday, and also on the Geo Snippets Reboot podcast. We are touching something near and dear to my heart. Scott, be nice. 100 things any geocacher must do sooner or later, and yes, Scott, I'm just leaving you totally out of the show notes. That's all there is to it. Wow. Yeah, so that's tomorrow on the Juice Divots Reboot podcast. Should be a lot of fun. Amy and I are going to be talking about 100 things any geocacher must do sooner or later. And for me, that's getting out in geocaching. So other than that, we'll see what other fun things we can find out as well. All right, let's move on, please, to the geocaching question of the day.
Geocaching question of the day.
Hey, cashers. I'm Lookout Lisa from Cash Advance, your host for the geocaching question of the day. Well, I've been caching since 2002, and I've been in the business of geocaching since 2005. Monday through Thursdays, we ask our followers on Twitter, Facebook, and Google Plus a question about geocaching. We recently asked, GPS batteries, rechargeable or disposable? Well, after tallying all the answers, we found that the vast majority, or 81% of cachers, use rechargeable batteries, and 19% use disposable. So here's what we heard. GeoDoc99 on Twitter shared, rechargeable, and I try to use my solar panel as much as possible. Well, that's great, GeoDoc. Well, Joe of Facebook shared, usually rechargeable, but I always carry a spare of disposable with me if I'm going to be out for a long day. Tony on Facebook spoke for disposables. So he said he uses disposable lithiums. They're the only ones that will get me through multiple days of caching without having to change out batteries over and over. Well, Mike on Facebook shared, my GPS unit is my cell phone, and it's rechargeable. Well, hey, as always, we really enjoyed hearing about what energizes your geocaching. And you can, too, if you follow us, Cache Advance, on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, for the geocaching question of the day. Thanks, and happy caching.
Well, thank you, Lisa. And I'll tell you what, when you start getting to my age, disposables has a totally different meaning. I'm just saying.
For the record, I use rechargeable batteries for the record.
There you go.
The official record.
The comments of the host are not necessarily the comments of everybody here.
No.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. And then things went downhill. Tonight, episode 377, geocacher Dudley Grunt.
Yes.
Oh, hello.
Hey, welcome, Dave. How you doing, sir?
Good. Very good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for stopping on by and gracing us with your ominous presence. We appreciate it.
My ominous presence. Oh, unfortunately, my camera wasn't working, but that's good to be here.
That's great. We appreciate it. Now, Dave is one of the people. We have several candidates for our host for the spot for number 4 for the geocaching podcast, and we thought there was no better way to get around and introducing each of our what do we call them, Scott? Pledges? What?
No hazing, right?
Very little, anyway. See, anything's possible.
Actually, I'm still getting hazed, so...
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you do it's endless, sir. So anyways, we thought it would be great to get Dave on the show and start throwing him in front of the masses so that the people out there and our listeners and viewers can get to meet Dave, and Dave gets to get along and try to talk with us goofballs every once in a while and see how we mesh. And so one of the ways that we do that is we bring the kind geocacher / pledge on and then start asking them all forthwith questions like, you know, what's your blood type, that kind of fun stuff. But I think we'll play nice tonight, Dave. And why don't you tell us about yourself as a geocacher, how long you've been doing and all that fun stuff.
Okay, I got started in May of 2006. My uncle had spotted an article in one of the papers around here, and he likes gadgets and stuff. That was a good excuse for him to go buy a GPS. So he was playing with it for a little while, and then he started telling me about it. And I didn't do it right away, but he told me about a particular cache here, and I'm in Maryland, near Columbia, Maryland. And it was called, the cache was called Pre-Columbian Relic, and it talked about some structure that was built to last, you know, a long time, and now people don't know it's there and drive by it, and but it's still sitting in. So it was really intriguing as to what it was, and it didn't really tell you. And it was really just like an abandoned stretch of road within a half clover leaf this highway that wasn't there before. So I did eventually get to it within a month or so, and that was pretty cool. But unfortunately, I first heard about it at work from someone at work in like 2002, but it didn't quite click, and I just imagined him having this expensive surplus military satellite tracking equipment or something, and he had it in his truck and went out to find places or something, so it didn't really click. So I kind of kick myself about that once in a while, that, you know, I could have been cashing for another 4 years before that and missed out on it.
That's awesome. Now, I you're on what in Maryland? Are you closer to, like, Salisbury on the east side, or are you on the mainland?
On the mainland, right here in what we would call central Maryland, just off Interstate 95, about halfway between Washington and Baltimore.
Oh, awesome. That's not bad. That's only, believe it or not, that's only about a five-hour drive from me here straight up to 95. That's awesome.
Yeah, about 5 hours. I've headed down your way just specifically for caching and stuff, and Raleigh, and then a little farther over to go to Charlotte a couple times today, specifically to do caching and hunting your dragons the one time, if you remember.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, that's awesome. So when it comes to what you're doing with geocaching now, how broad have you gone out as far as I've met you? Like, I think we actually met, you had one of your signs when we met at Geo Woodstock a couple of years ago, if I remember right.
Yeah, I have a rather large trouble bug of a from another Dudley that I met in Dudley, North Carolina, Dudley Seekers over there. And Dudley, North Carolina was a little town my son spotted on the map heading home from Myrtle Beach one year. And we swung through and got some pictures, but I didn't have a smartphone and, you know, didn't have a whole lot of contacts yet to think about trying to call. So we just went around, checked it out, and then I swung through there a couple more times over a couple, you know, the next few years. There's like only like two caches in this little like crossroads town. And still hadn't found the two. And so going down to Geo Woodstock a couple years ago when it was Florida, I swung through and made arrangements to meet up with this Dudley Seekers, who I noticed who had just recently DNF'd that same cache. So we met up and found it together, which was pretty cool. And then he told me he had an uncle, somebody who worked for like the highway department or something, and could probably get me a surplus Dudley City Limit sign. So nice. I thought that was pretty cool, and I trusted it was all legit. And I figured I wouldn't ask too many questions. And so the next time I came through, I picked that up from him, and actually, yeah, it was before Woodstock that I met him, and then on the way to Woodstock, I picked it up and brought it down, and that was the first place it went, first event I took it to. So it's about 3x4 size, big green and white, you know, highway sign.
That's awesome. Yeah, see, I tried to do the same thing. There's actually a town not too far from here called Micro.
Right off right on 95.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the police stopped me before I could get away. Pretty darn cool. Awesome. So, you know, one of the things that we wanted to incorporate, besides learning more about you as a geocacher, is also to find out your different things that you do as with activities when it comes to geocaching. And you have quite a large haul when it comes to responsibility, because you take care of it with Open Caching North America, correct?
Yes, I'm one of the three admins there, along with Mr. Yuck in New York and Native Texan from Texas. And there's been a couple other folks, a different person had started RV Road Trip, but then he sort of retired from geocaching after some health things and decided to kind of take it easy. And so now that, you know, so it's the three of us now. And I enjoy that. I'm sort of an avowed alternative geocacher. When I just first started hearing about the other sites, my thought was, well, you mean there are some other caches that I didn't know about? Well, sure, I'd want to go find those. Why not? And you know, I hear sometimes people will say about caching, it's kind of neat because, you know, like, it's kind of like this secret, you know, thing that, you know, people, regular folks or muggles, whatever, you know, go around and they don't know all these things are there. Or, like, I kind of think of the alternative caching stuff as, like, the correlation from caching to that. So, like, you have all these cachers going around, and they don't know these other caches are there. And like I said, when I first figured it out, I said, well, okay, there's more caches. I can go find these. And this kind of started with Terra Caching, did a virtual nearby, and played around with Navicache a little bit, although ever since I've been using it, it's been pretty much a pretty low-use site. But, you know, still, there's virtuals and stuff around. And and then when the Open Caching North America, originally just U.S., launched in August of 2010, I jumped on there right away, and pretty soon RV Road Trip asked me if I wanted to be a moderator on their forums, and then stepped up a little bit more and started doing some more work with them, and that's a lot of fun being involved there, and it's just, we offer a lot of different types of caches, from the virtuals and moving caches that, you know, maybe have been other sites to, you know, some other types that are unique, bid caches and guestbook caches and different things that, you know, just different options.
I hear open caching is a lot more popular, like on the East Coast, than it is where I am. I know it's not very popular where I am. It's I know caches can go. There's not that many around. I mean, I think the closest one to me it was miles and miles away. But I heard it's a lot more dense in the East Coast.
Yeah, I think so. There's essentially, because I think the three big places I think of that there's the most caches and cachers are kind of around here, because we have a bit of a group of cachers that are, you know, do various sites, and Buffalo is another place I've gone up specifically to do the OCNA caches, along with TerraCache stuff up there, is around Buffalo in western New York, and that's where Mr. Yuck is. And then down in even, you know, kind of through North Carolina, various areas, Charlotte's real big, Raleigh's got a fair amount around, and in between. So definitely, I think all the alternative caches sites, you know, sort of vary in density, just depending on where a few people have, because it takes at least a few people to start getting active and finding each other's caches and then being motivated to put some more out. And then, so, yeah, definitely a spotty around depending where you're at. And But always inviting folks to, you know, check it out. And if nothing else, you know, try, you know, experiment with listing some virtuals or other, some of these other types of caches where they, something different and play with. Like, I just got published a series of virtuals over at the Patuxent Wildlife Research Refuge, or just Patuxent Research Refuge, over here in Laurel near me, and it's a U.S. Fish and Wildlife place, and these are the first caches of any kind that have ever been there, as far as I can tell, and I work closely with the rangers out there, and I was hoping to be able to put some physical things out, at least, you know, under their super close supervision in certain areas or something, but she went through all her stuff and decided we weren't going to be able to do that, but I still coordinated with her with these virtuals and hoping to get some more out. They have another large part that used to be part of Fort Meade over here and got ceded to them a number of years ago. So there's a lot of trails, a lot of kind of little, even, you know, old remnants of Fort Meade in different places out in the woods and on these trails. So it'll be interesting places to explore.
Yeah, one of the things that I really look forward to with having you on the show, Dave, is because, let's face it, geocaching.com is the dominant force when it comes to listing sites. There are other sites that are out there that, like with Open Caching North America, that it's good to be able to have the extra viewpoints, to be able to say, oh, by the way, over here, this is something else that is an option for you if you want to look into these particular kind of geocaches. This is a good place to go. And with any site that is trying to get more idea of, hey, if there aren't geocaches in your area, then why don't you go out and put some, so that the ball gets rolling with that. Take the initiative so that you go out and start doing stuff like that, so that things like this can grow. And I think it would definitely be a benefit to having your viewpoints with this, and Native Texan, she's been on the show many times as well, to be able to talk over things like that. Why don't you say a little bit of a difference, because I know there are people out there that go, well, wait a minute, open caching, there's an opencaching.com, but what's this other one with North America?
Well, Open Caching North America is part of a global collection of sites that are generally nation-based. They started out in with Poland and Germany. There's an Open Caching UK site and a couple of smaller ones that seem like they've started, but some of the countries, there's like Spain and Latvia, I think, where I'm not sure how much has gotten done with the sites, but so they're generally nation-based with their own admins and people to run them. They've been around starting since like 2005, especially with Poland and Germany. And around 2005 also, there was a guy, and right now I'm drawing a blank on his name, who was starting to put together an opencaching.com that would be at least he was working with them. There was his forms were on one of these sites that archive, you know, websites where you can go and look. He had forums going and discussion about the site, but never really got it going. And I think he just let the domain sit, and eventually it had lapsed. And then when Garmin, well, and then said in 2010, August 2010 is when RV Road Trip launched the ocaching.us, which we eventually expanded for to kind of cover all of North America. And we have caches in few in Mexico and some more in Canada. And then some, I guess around that same time, Garmin was looking at launching their own geocaching service. They talk about having spoken with the folks on the opencaching.de or Germany site but they chose to go with the name that the domain was available because no one with the nation-based sites ever decided to pick up the .com from the original guy, and because they're all, you know, the nation domains. And so they went with that, and so there's a lot of, no end of confusion. We have our own blog, the Open Caching North America blog, and we'll talk about all kinds of things caching, but the first couple of entries we had talked about sort of the history of the open caching and why there's two names and goes in the back. So a lot of times I'll pull that up and share that in a link if I start to talk with folks that are curious or, you know, wonder, confused about it. So kind of Jim, Mr. Yuck, went through a good history there and an explanation on what the deal was.
Awesome. You know, and we'll get more on to, obviously, with opencaching.us as time goes on. Because I always want that type of extra viewpoint. You know, it's one of the things that people that say nowadays, well, you know, open caching or geocaching.com doesn't do virtuals anymore. They're not making new ones. They do there.
Yeah.
Yep, so same. It's an option, folks. I'm just saying that there's options out there to go with, and if you want to run with it, that's choice. And our show does not depict on any one particular listening site. We want to give everybody as much as they possibly can get.
We're actually discussing in the chat room right now that actually open caching has, you know, still has virtuals and still has webcams and whatnot. You know, different than what geocaching.com has.
And we love talking about it. Now, you personally, Dave, as far as things that go, wanting to be a host with the show, what are some of the things, because I know there's got to be some frustrations where you want to see, you know, Open Caching North America expand, certain things that go on with geocaching in and of itself. What kind of things would you like to say to the listeners as far as what you would want to see progress when it comes to geocaching and some of the things that you personally would like to see for yourself with geocaching?
Well, like you were saying, you know, we were talking about it being spotty around, and I think people, you know, you hear a lot of times, well, I looked around, there's not any around, and, well, you know, that's, of course, probably going to be a problem with any kind of newer site. People have to just decide if it's a something they would like to see. And I think diversity and options are always beneficial. So I just sort of always had that interest in, even before caching and stuff, like sort of the underdog or alternative options for things from when I was a comic collector and all that stuff too, that, you know, if you just decide that that's something that you think would be valuable, that, you know, people make an effort to list a few caches, and even if they think, look, I'm not going to get a ton of hits, but you're planting some seeds, and then you get someone else in your area that's interested and starts building up. I just think that an acceptance that they are caching services, and that is understanding that geocaching is not limited to one site, or that isn't defined by that. And even if they're not particularly interested or decide to get in, just that understanding there is a little bit more out there, and that it's all actual geocaching and just under different sites and services.
Right. Yes. You know, and for the record, you know, I've never found a different one.
Like from a different listing site?
Yeah, I've never stumbled across one, which I'm surprised I haven't. You know, as much as I've found in, you know, the years I've been doing it, I've never stumbled upon one. I've stumbled upon actual archived caches, and I've stumbled upon caches that haven't been put live yet, but I've never stumbled upon like an open caching one.
Even how about the letterboxing? There's another thing that
I have stumbled upon a letterbox. Yeah, okay, I'm lying then. Yes, I have stumbled upon a letterbox. Yeah.
And while it's not caching, it's another one of these alternate activities that I enjoy too. You know, I haven't done a lot. I've only done 10 pure, you know, letterboxes, but something I'd like to try to get in. It's one of my New Year's resolutions to try to get back a little bit more into caching stuff. I've been for a little while. I've been getting heavier into Munzee again. I'd done it for a while and then got kind of out of it more and then got into a little bit more, and you know, it's good, but it's like it's kind of hard, you know, to you start getting into a thing and you're trying to help I do some of the clan stuff with the Munzee, so you start trying to do that and help with that, and it's like, well, now suddenly I don't have much time for the caching, so I was like, I'm gonna make a decision for the new year that, you know, I'll still do some of that Munzee stuff, but you know, I'm gonna get more into the caching, and even with Groundspeak, I have been hitting a lot of caches recently, but when I do Groundspeak stuff, I like to kind of focus and decide that, you know, well, currently I'm going to start looking for like some of the older caches, so I run Paco queries for caches that are still around up to like 2002 or 4 or something like that, and just pick a time frame and say, like, I'm going to go try to find some of these, because they're going to mostly be more the larger caches and more wood stuff and everything. Although I was surprised, one, I ran a query not long ago for like up to 2002, I think, and one of them was a lamp skirt. It was a large pill bottle, but it made me wonder if it was like one of the earlier lamp skirt caches, you know, and it was still around.
Wow. I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Boy, that'll bring nightmares for Sonny, I'm telling you.
Yeah. I thought about him, yeah.
Funny. So, you know, it's interesting with that. Corey, you have any questions that you wanted to ask Dave as far as in general for geocaching or what? Anything specific?
You know, I'm having a great time with the guys here in the chat room.
Hypothermic is what the problem is. It's 7 degrees there and his brain's freezing.
I'm actually getting hot with the jacket on now.
Corey's in the chat room.
Wife came home and she jacked up the thermostat.
We have pictures of Corey, poor guy. What was it? Last year, you were in your garage. And the frame around him was the glow from the heater that was above him when he's in sub-zero temperatures in the garage. And we won't talk about what came up with that or why he was in said garage.
But I'm in the house now because I've made up. Sorry, we weren't going to talk about what. That's right.
Awesome.
What put you in the garage? You actually got thrown into the garage? Really?
I was in the doghouse that time.
Yeah. Oh, wow. But the garage? That's kind of cold, man.
Not the dogs, if I remember. Winter,
yes. The dogs were in the house.
Oh, that's right. The dogs were in the house.
That's bad.
Once again, Virgil Bliss with geocaching. we'll specialize a show.
That's why you always have to pay at least 51% of the mortgage. You always got to pay at least 51%.
Wow. So, Dave, when it comes to different things with geocaching, one of the things that Scott is very good at is rants when it comes to stuff. You know, just to get to know you a little bit better, what is there anything that actually kind of, well, I always try to use wording that's not going to offend the people across the great pond, but so I say stuff anyways. Is there stuff that cheeses you off when it comes to geocaching that you like to talk about? Because we do rants here too.
Okay, I don't know. I mean, one thing that frustrates me a little bit over time, I guess, and I guess at this point I have been caching. You know, I've been caching for about over 8 years. Is that the whole thing with cache sizes migrating, not just that there, I mean, I guess it's apart from just the fact that there's more smaller ones, but that what people will publish and call a regular will be barely bigger than a film canister.
No,
that's not a regular. It's like, you know, even on ground, even on Groundspeak, they have, you know, explanations for what they are, and it's like,
yeah,
not a thing. I've got trackables I want to drop off, and I'm looking. Okay, I've learned I can't. you know, I definitely can't include small if I do a pocket query or something. I specifically want to go find some caches to drop them off. I've got to at least put in regular, and hopefully they'll be, I probably exaggerate a little bit with barely bigger than a film canister, but hopefully a regular will at least be what I would call small and be able to fit some of these. But yeah, that's one thing I think.
That's a good point. I mean, that's been going on for a while now.
Yeah.
And I would love for somebody to come up with a magical fix for some of this stuff that does happen, where you can sit there and...
What? Finish.
And just emphasize, you know, a large means this, a regular means this.
I mean, sadly, it shouldn't have to be explained, the fact that Grounsby actually had to put images there on the website. I mean, really? I need an image to tell me what a large is and what a regular is?
Yes, you do, because...
Come on. Really?
No... Because back when it started, what meant a certain size meant a certain size. But as it went on, it started getting smaller. It really did, because
the
mislabeling.
Yeah, it's relative, I guess, to what people are used to seeing. So if they're used to seeing nano containers, they get small with, well, hey, I mean, a film camera must be a small, right?
Right.
So much bigger than a nano.
Right. Yeah, and you shouldn't get on the rant, oh, there should be a nano. I mean, that should definitely be a size.
Yeah, that's been wrong with it.
I think it's time, guys. I'm just saying.
I can't believe it doesn't have it yet. It's ridiculous.
Although I shouldn't speak, I suppose. We don't have a special size for it on Open Caching North America, but the one thing I kind of feared about that is, like, you know, I don't think we have a lot of what would be called nanos, I guess. At least I don't think between either Austin and, like, most of the other sites, I mean, the TerraCache and stuff even, I've found very few things that would qualify, like, as a nano or even guardrail or lamppost stuff.
But, most of the things that I've seen on the other sites are more out in the open.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not urban. They're more still out in the open the terrain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it may be also because we do have some of these virtual options and stuff. If you find a neat location in a city, you know, you're like, well, maybe I don't have to stick that nano underneath the bench that's nearby this cool sculpture. You know, I can list a virtual and ask some questions mm-hmm. about it. And one thing that we have that's neat with the virtuals and stuff, we have, just to get back to that, we have a log password built in, like, that the owner can you choose to use. So if you do a virtual or one of some of the other ones, or even traditional cache, if you want to avoid having people armchair log it, or you having to go back and forth with emails, you can put in a log password, and when the person goes to log it, they have to put that password in. And
that's the best part of virtuals.
I like that.
Even
the best part of virtuals is the armchair.
even if it
goes to virtuals, really? Yeah. People go to virtuals, really?
It's funny, you know, some of the ones, I mean, we still have a lot of them around D.C., even the Groundspeak ones and stuff, and even downtown around the mall in Washington, D.C., there's a few of them that never got any kind of requirements listed on them.
Really?
They were so early, and even, I mean, I thought at some point Groundspeak would have, even with the earlier ones, said, well, you know, we really want you to add some. But there's one for the Lincoln Memorial, and it doesn't have any, it just says visit and log. I mean,
really? I want to go to D.C. I heard D.C. is just loaded with virtuals.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
Yeah, I want to go there.
I've made multiple trips to go down to town and walk the whole mall and stuff. And I finally, a couple of years ago now, I actually checked off. I'd found all of the existing Groundspeak virtuals in D.C., Maryland, and Delaware.
Wow.
And there's only one webcam in there that I haven't done either, and that's in Annapolis. And you can, people do it now just by going on this one pier, but if you read the write-up, it the camera is supposed to be pointing out a little bit more out into the water than it does nowadays, and the owner wanted you to get it on being on a boat going through. I know a few people who've used a kayak to go out. But there's boats that do little tours around Annapolis and stuff, too, and you could probably be on one of those. So I've kind of just said, you know, one day I'll do it that way. I just feel like I want to do it the right way. And that's the only webcam in the three D.C., Maryland, Delaware that I haven't done, just because I wanted to do it.
Like, now, Dave, I have to ask, since you are the closest person that I've been able to when it comes to asking about virtuals, geocaching, when it comes to the problem that geocaching.com had – with virtuals is you started getting people doing the, I met my girlfriend at this booth in McDonald's, and this is where I'm going to make the virtual for that. What have you found it being excessively misused, where people are just making stupid stuff when it comes to virtuals, or have you been able to control that, or has it even been necessary?
I don't think – I haven't really seen it be necessary. I guess one of the things, is that people on our site and even with Terra Caching when I see them there and stuff that seem to be a little bit of a self-selected group of folks who have been more experienced cachers and understand some of these things. I always hear that sort of a storyline, but I guess that was – they were already archived, I think they were grandfathered or whatever in like 2005, I think, on Groundspeak. So I think when I started, there weren't still new ones coming out. But the closest thing I've ever even found on Groundspeak to those kind is just across off 83, just up into across into the Pennsylvania line. There's a liquor store that on the side of it has big painted bottles, like almost like a kind of a big mural, and there's a virtual for that. But that's like the closest I've found to that sort of. And I don't. Maybe they got weeded out a long time ago, and they're not. You know, you don't even see those on Groundspeak anymore. But I think with us, I haven't seen anything come through. You know, that's been an issue.
Well, maybe it's been blown up out of proportion too much, and hopefully for something like that. If people want to choose to come over to Open Caching North America and start creating virtuals with that, and if somebody else decides to open up some form of virtual caching again, that would be good to do. And maybe there won't be that kind of an onrush for silly stuff and people that want to, like Earth caches, for example. You, the people that are dedicated to Earth caches, know what they what's necessary for it, and they go out and make good Earth caches. Maybe they can start doing that for virtuals as well. So that would be a good thing to do, because obviously people want it.
Yeah, virtuals, it's a shame. Virtuals are there's some great virtuals out there, and I've been to great places that needed virtuals. They probably had them at one point, but
yes.
They need them. You know, that should have them, that you should go. People should be brought there, aside from just there's zero place to hide a geocache, but it's
right.
A beautiful place, you know.
I've heard a few people recommend on some of the podcasts and otherwise that like they that maybe Groundspeak consider doing virtuals as a form of like a history caching or something and have some sort of organization that would oversee it like Earth caches. But even there, you're limiting it to historic. I mean, because there's I found virtuals for interesting sculptures and things that it wouldn't really be historic or would be one idea for them to do it, but it would still be a limit.
I think there should be historic. I think there definitely should be historic, if anything.
Right, but I also agree
back limited.
There's other spots, too.
Absolutely, but they should at least bring it back for historic, I think, definitely. I think it definitely should be brought. I think it should be like an Earth cache. Even if it's in a limited capacity, I think it definitely should be brought back.
Yeah, at least till they let the reins out.
Yeah, I think that if they could incorporate, I mean, they play with it a little bit with their lab caches doing the password stuff. I think that if they brought it back, they could use something like that, because then they can encourage the owners to, or maybe even require them to, especially for something historic, be able to answer some kind of question or something. And what I do with my virtuals and stuff a lot of times when I ask questions, I have one. It's not really historic, but it's at the National Firefighters Memorial Ground up in Western Maryland a little bit. And I have one for a 9/11 memorial, and I have the log passwords made up from a couple different questions, but one of them involves like a number that's on an unusual fire hydrant that's nearby. So I figure, I ask something that doesn't have to do with the main subject, but I know that you've been there, and I know it's not something, someone's not going to Google, tell me about the fire hydrant next to the memorial. You're not going to find that online,
right?
Unless someone's specifically sharing it because of the cache or something, but. So that's one thing I looked to, but I think that if they did something, they would be probably smart to maybe incorporate the password feature. And like I said, they're playing with it a little bit when they do their lab caches. You have to put some kind of passwords in those, and they can integrate that kind of stuff back into like some of the regular caches. Because actually, even with their favorite points at Groundspeak launched, we weren't the first. I think all the other open caching sites had it too, but Open Caching of America, we had rankings on our site prior to Groundspeak introducing them. So I'm not sure they necessarily got the idea or decided to do it because of us, but it's just interesting that there have been some features that we have on the site other than cache types that are interesting that could be incorporated in. And that's one thing that we have actually both a you can recommend. We've called them recommendations. And it's the same thing, actually, exactly the same. You get, for every 10 caches, you get a recommendation, and you can recommend a certain cache. But you also can rate every cache on a scale of 1 to 5. And I think that a rating like that is also helpful because it's like, well, okay, people only get so many rate favorite points. So if a cache isn't one of your favorites, but I think it still can be helpful to give it a rating and see that, okay, maybe it's not a favorite, but it's, you know, maybe if you have questions about it, you give it a lower score or whatever. But I'm not sure if Groundspeak will look into that kind of number rating because they, as far as upsetting people,
right,
they actually get a low score. But
wow, that's good. And this is the kind of discussion we love. This is excellent stuff, Dave. This is really good. So one last question. I'll give you your 30-second elevator speech. And then we'll let you go because we're running a little late, but this has been really good talk.
Okay, good
talk with you. So why do you want to be a host on the Geocaching Podcast?
Well, I think it's one of the things I always recommend to newer cachers, and they're asking, you know, what should we do? I always recommend checking out podcasts in addition to checking out, like, their local geocaching organizations as just a way to get a lot of good information to help the hobby, and I think they're very valuable. And I've probably since starting in 2007 is when I started listening to Podcaster, and then around the same time, I guess, started listening to the Geocaching Podcast. And I think they're very valuable for the community, and I just think it'd be nice to be able to give back and contribute something to them.
That's awesome. Thank you, man. And don't forget, we can be bribed. I'm just saying. All right, guys, good stuff. Great talking with you, Dave. Thank you so much. Dudley,
wow, Grant,
thank you so much for being on, sir. And we definitely are going to want you on a whole lot more as well. Gentlemen, anything else?
No, Dudley, thank you for coming on the
show. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to do.
That's great. All right, guys, we'll move on. We have several other people that are also interested in being the hosts. But, you know, I think the ultimate goal is going to be, since we have such a large collection of fine people that want to be on the show, we're going to try to keep all of them on in one capacity or another to make sure that we don't lose any of this great information that is out there and keep it all for ourselves here with the Geocaching Podcast. So that's going to be going on. We'll have other guests on in the next couple of weeks. And again, Dave, thank you so much.
All right. Well.
All right. Have a great one, and let's move on. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast, our fine viewers and listeners. Thanks to Lisa at cache-advance.com. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast, right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio visual version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, and many of our favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, and Corey Stevens. This show is copyright 2014 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.